In our study in Ecclesiastes, the point we've come to, as we read the words of Solomon, we see that he is, it seems to me at least, has gone through kind of a change in perspective of some things. You know, some of the first chapters seemed somewhat pessimistic and cynical as he just kind of looked at life and what it was and looking at everything under the sun. But now as his view has increased and he's looking at life above the sun, looking at things maybe a little bit more from God's perspective, well, it's a different view that he has. And in chapter 9, we saw some change. And in chapter 10, I think even more so, that he's kind of, in some ways, almost telling parables or proverbs with an antidote to life. As we got into chapter 10 on the Lord's Day, he kind of began the chapter by talking about wisdom versus folly, and the great benefit of wisdom, and that you need to kind of think some things through. There were some things, some points that he made that I just kind of just really appreciated, because you can put some things in some very common perspective. You know, you can work real hard making a big jug of perfume, but all it takes is one stink fly to fall into it, and it kind of ruins the whole batch. Such can be the case of a lot of things in life. Something small can destroy something of great value. And then he makes some application with that. And we need to make sure our heart is where it needs to be. And that it's real easy to be foolish in decisions that we make or in things that we even think about. How we need to control our anger. And that sometimes even when we are pressed real hard by those, maybe even those who are against us, keeping our place and keeping our temper in check can pay some big dividends. It can work out, you know, so much better. You know, there's some things in life, once again, that he makes the point that life isn't always fair, and some things doesn't always work out the way we think it should. Sometimes we see those who have little common sense even put in positions of great power and authority. That can't be right. Life isn't fair. Well, he has said that before. He's already made that point. He's just making the observation. Here is the way it is. And then if you're going to be foolish, and you're going to do some things without thinking it through well, you better understand that it could put you in trouble. If you dig a pit for somebody to fall in, you might fall in yourself. That's what he says. You better look out. And if you're going to try to break through the wall to get to the other side, I'm presuming a side that you don't own, you better make sure there's not snakes on the other side first, because they might bite you before you can get over on that side. And if you're going to quarry stone, if you're going to be about that kind of a business, you better be careful, because you might be injured doing that. Just like if you try to split logs but you don't know what you're doing, well, you might get hurt. It's some common sense kind of things. And the point that he was making is that if you're just foolish and you don't think things through, there's some bad things that can happen. And so once again, he's making the point of the benefits of wisdom. We are looking at chapter 10, or verse 10, really, as our time came to an end. If an axe is dull and the edge is unsharpened, more strength is needed, but skill will bring success. And the point, I think we started making the point that, you know, just a few minutes to sharpen the blade can save you a lot of extra work. But the fool won't think about doing that. We'll just keep on beating on that wood with a dull axe and work twice as hard to get the job done. It's the same point he's been making. You know, be wise about what you're doing. Verse 11, this is where we kind of left off. He said, if a snake bites before it is charmed, there is no profit for the charmer. I'm not positive what that means, but I think the idea is if you're a snake charmer and people pay you money, you know, to see you charm the snake, if the snake bites someone, you're probably not going to get paid. You know, I think that's kind of the idea to that. Sometimes you have to think through what it is to find success in life. And I kind of think that was the idea. You know, wisdom plans ahead and you know, thinks ahead and makes some plans. If you're going to be a snake charmer, make sure people stand back far enough they can't get bit. I guess that would be part of what you would think through.
I have a note that I put in some comments. I made it. Timing is everything.
So very true. Oh, yes. Yeah.
I think the other thing we can learn from verse 11 too is if you set out to do a task that has an element of danger to it,
Sure.
I'm not gonna try to charm a snake because I don't know what I'm doing.
I charmed them best with a 12 gauge myself. You know, really, in all the last statements he has made, that's the basic idea of all of those statements. He's just saying it in different ways where it means something to somebody, I think.
With the respect to the snake charmer, I'm wondering if the concern is the snake biting someone who might pay him or the snake biting the charmer.
Yeah.
Certainly there's no profit to the charmer if he's dead.
Yeah, that's right. And who's going to pay that snake charmer to see him get bit, you know? He's going to make the same amount of money either way. And he might die in the process.
But that's the, brings it to a personal level.
Yeah.
The snake charmer has to be careful.
Yeah, and you better be good
at
what you're doing.
Think it through and make sure you know how to.
And really, that's his point over and over here, is about, you know, wisdom. I mean, and you think about some of the previous chapters, how he's talked about wisdom and the fool, you know, at different points in time. You know, I mean, even sometimes it's those who are wise who kind of come up with the short end of the stick. Because sometimes there are fools in places of position above them. And that was some of the points like, life's not fair. But still, all in all, he still talks about the benefits of being wise. And encourages us, you know, to be wise. Look at verse 12 and following here. Words from a wise man's mouth are gracious, but a fool is consumed by his own lips. At the beginning, his words are folly. At the end, they are wicked madness, and the fool multiplies words. No one knows what is coming. Who can tell him what will happen after him? Solomon has a lot to say about words and what we say. You've heard it said before, a fool proves he is a fool when he opens his mouth. You know, I mean, it doesn't take too long to figure out someone has no common sense at all. And I've noticed that sometimes it seems that those with the least common sense talk the most. And it just kind of seems to reinforce what we've already known. That's what Solomon's saying. I mean, that's his whole point. Words from a wise man's mouth are gracious. Here's the contrast. But a fool is consumed by his own words, by his own lips. What would you say to that? What would your comments be?
Isn't there a saying that says it's better to remain quiet and follow food than to speak and remove all doubt?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly right. Remove all doubt by opening your mouth. That's right. What else would you say to this?
Sounds like a politician to me.
Could be. Very much. You know, sometimes it's the fool who seems likes to hear his own words, likes to hear himself talk, whether others enjoy that or not, likes to hear himself, you know. Or the one who knows everything, a fool is consumed by his own lips. You know, thinks he knows everything. You ever try to talk to someone who knows everything? And even if you try in a nice way to try to say, there might be another way of thinking about that, and you try to explain yourself, it doesn't do any good because they've already got it figured out. That imparts what Solomon is talking about. At the beginning, his words are folly. At the end, they are wicked madness. They don't get any better. The more he talks, the worse. You see that? I mean, the more he talks, the worse it gets. Now, I mean, what's the applications here that we need to be making? It's real easy to talk about someone else who's a fool. What's the application we need to be making here?
Be careful what we say.
Don't go into politics.
Yeah. Make sure that we're not the fool. I mean, it's always so easy to look at someone else and think, we've got it figured out. And they don't. Maybe we're the one talking the most and we're the fool. You have to be honest about that. You have to, you know, consider that type of a thing. And the fool multiplies words nonstop. Kind of like the expert on everything. You know, our speech will betray us sometimes. Passage here in let's look at Matthew chapter 26. Matthew chapter 26. You'll remember the story here. Matthew 26. kind of the latter part of that chapter. It was Peter who was in the garden, or in the courtyard, actually, where Jesus was on trial. And he's already been asked if he was one of them, if he was with Jesus. In verse 73, it says, "And after a while, those who stood by came to him and said to Peter, 'Surely you are one of them, because your speech betrays you.'" I'm not sure exactly what it was about his speech, if it was just the dialect that he had as he spoke, or the fact some of the things he said sounded like Jesus or like the other apostles. But whatever it was, they could identify something about him by his speaking. I just thought that was an interesting parallel point, just to kind of, you know, think about a little bit. And if we're honest with ourselves, we need to ask ourselves, what does our speech say about us? You can make a lot of applications with that, really. You know, "For by your word you will be justified, by your word you will be condemned," Jesus said in Matthew 12, verse 37. And it's just the idea and the warning over and over that we need to think about the words that we are speaking. Look at Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 7. Proverbs 14, verse 7. "Stay away from a foolish man, for you will not find knowledge in his lips." Just something to think about. You know, a long time ago, there was a couple of pieces of advice that I've kind of kept in mind. You know, that both were somewhat related, just as far as listening to what other people have to say. You know, before taking advice from someone, you know, the counsel was to stand back and listen very carefully to what they have to say. How does that compare to their lives? You know, I mean, does the way they walk, does it show that they've used good judgment and wisdom in their lives? You know, look at their circumstance, you know, their job, their family. And if they've just kind of made a wreck of their life, probably not a person you want to go to for advice. You know, kind of same idea, same thought. Somebody else told me one time, used to be at work, you know, around the years ago back in the shop, you know, guys always sit around and talk, and the older guys would always tell the young guys, "Here's what you need to do with your money. Here's what you need to do when you make some extra money." And someone pulled me aside one time and said, "You know, all I'm going to say is never take financial advice from someone who's broke." I remembered that one. You know, it's common sense. I mean, just think about that. You know, and your words say something about who you are. And sometimes our words betray us. You know? Yeah, Dave?
2 Timothy 2:15 talks about studying to show yourself approved, so you can use that not only in studying the Bible, but in life.
Sure. Yeah, and then you have something of value to say. And you think about it that way. You know, the words that's coming from, I mean, it's the same kind of thing. You make the same application, someone who's trying to give religious or spiritual advice, but you try to talk to them what the Bible says and they're completely lost. Light bulb should go off here. This is probably not someone that we can go to for spiritual advice if they don't know what the book says. Same kind of thing. Good thoughts. Anything else? Look ahead here a little bit more, verse 15. "A fool's work wearies him. He does not know the way to town. Woe to you, O land, whose king was a child, and whose princes feast in the morning. Blessed are you, O land, whose king is of noble birth, and whose princes eat at a proper time for strength and not for drunkenness." All right. Think about some applications here. What are the points, you suppose, that Solomon's trying to make to us here? A fool's work wearies him. He does not even know the way to town. Help me with that. How does a fool's work weary
him? Well, part of it may be going back to his earlier comment about, you know, if you're chopping wood with a dull axe, you know, you're working a lot harder than you need to. And the fool does not work smart,
yeah,
typically.
Yeah.
You know, he does things, he exerts a lot more energy than necessary.
Right.
So
yeah, works real hard but doesn't get anything done. You know, yes, that happens.
Oftentimes, I learned this at school. People will repeat the same things over. over and over expecting something to change. But the real people who are really smart, they're going to change what they need to get successful.
Sure. And when they've seen something that works, you know, we're going to take that and apply it.
Right.
You ever see somebody in a work environment trying to do some kind of a job, they keep doing the same mistake over and over and over again? And it's like there's no lessons learned, you know? What is the definition of insanity here? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting to find a different result, you know, kind of a thing. And so, kind of the analogy he gives here, you know, he doesn't even know the way to town. You know, just, I don't know that necessarily means that someone is dumb. I don't think that's necessarily the point. Have you ever known somebody that's just like super smart, but, you know, can't find their way out the door? Kind of a thing. I mean, just has maybe a tremendous amount of intelligence, but lacks common sense. You know, I mean, that could be part of the problem. Kind of the issue here, you know, too. You know, woe to you, O land, whose king is a servant. My text says, but I think literally means more like a child. Okay? All right. So, if the king of the land is a child, whose princes feast in the morning, what's the problem with that? Wouldn't that show some prosperity or something of this nation? What's the problem if his princes all feast in the morning?
They're not
going to get anything done, right?
They're too full. They get no work done.
They got nothing done. You know, he goes, blessed are you, O land, whose king is of noble birth. What do you think that means, noble birth? What do you think the idea of that is? What's noble, of noble birth? Maybe.
Upper class?
No.
Upper class?
I don't know. I'm thinking opposite of that. The only reason I'm coming to that is because of the next line. Whose princes eat at a proper time for strength and not for drunkenness.
And that he's wise. He's smart.
Wise. And as opposed to his princes, you know, he puts out a feast and his princes eat and drink in the morning, get nothing done the rest of the day. Perhaps here's someone who knows something about work, and that if you're going to get anything done, get up in the morning and go get it done. You can rest in the evening. You can feast in the evening. Maybe that's more the idea.
And it's not just a feast. It's a meal to feed yourself.
For strength.
Not for gluttony.
Yeah, that was interesting too. For strength and not for drunkenness.
The idea of being noble is something who's an honorable person, not nobility. I think of Queen of England, but an honorable person.
Yeah. You ever notice if you get up early in the morning, you got some set tasks for the day? If you get right on that first thing in the morning, you tend to get a lot more done. At least that works that way for me. I mean, if I've got a day that I can set aside where I'm just going to try to get some things done, but I don't get started on until 10 o'clock, I might as well just scratch the day off. I mean, it's like, it doesn't happen. I mean, it's kind of that way on the farm. You know, we're doing some work around the farm in the summertime. If we weren't working at 6 o'clock in the morning, we might as well not even start. Because we get more done from 6 in the morning till noon than we could get done from noon until it was dark at 9 o'clock. We just got more done that way. Maybe everyone's not like that. That's the way I am. You got to get up there and get it done. You know, get it going. That's what I got thinking about when I was reading this. Verse 18. If a man is lazy, the rafters sag. If his hands are idle, the house leaks. You have a picture of that in your mind?
Yeah.
Think of a friend of mine.
I have a roof like that.
You might not like the personal application here, Danny. But this is what Solomon says. You know, a friend of mine back home. Not the most industrious kind of person. Nice guy. But I mean, the barn is by our own farm. The barn's just falling in. I'm going, Bill, why don't you work on that barn? You know, I mean, the bones are still pretty good. You know, you could kind of, you know, put a roof on that thing and dry it up and, you know, make a good barn out of that. Yeah, I'm going to do that. I've been planning to do that. And, you know, about 12 years later, a big wind came and I just blew the thing over. Okay, he hadn't done anything to it. Well, Bill was not the most industrious person, you know. And I can't help but think about that when I read this right here in the rafters sack.
This reminds me of a book I read when I was in, like, in third grade. The book was full of short stories. There was a short story in there about Farmer Smith visit Farmer Brown on a rainy day. Farmer Brown was ruthlessly in his barn. And Smith said to Brown, I said, Brown, roof's leaking, you need to fix that. He said, yeah, I'm going to, but I can't do it today, it's raining. So Smith went back to visit him 2 or 3 weeks later. It was a nice bright sunny day. He said, Brown, it's a nice bright sunny day, be a good day to fix that roof. He said, well, I don't need to worry about it today, it's not raining.
I think I know something like that. There.
Not the exact point of the verse, but you take this and combine it with the early part of the chapter about the flies and the perfume. Is it any? It doesn't matter what you're talking about in life. It's easier for something to break or to tear something down than to build it up. Mm-hmm. That's just how it is.
Mm-hmm. Always is. You're right. Now, the fool can get it tore down pretty well. It's going to take some wisdom to get something built up. Look at verse 19. A feast is made for laughter, and wine makes life merry, but money is the answer for everything. I find this to be a really interesting passage, particularly in view of some things that Solomon has said, you know, about money in particular, and wealth, the things of this time. Even feasting, some things that he has had to say about that. Think about this a minute. I'd like to see what your comments are. A feast is made for laughter, and wine makes life merry, but money is the answer for everything. Really now. How do you deal with that passage? And really, the only way we can deal with that passage is in view of some things he's already said.
Well, my only thought is it might be sarcasm in the context of what he's saying here.
Mm-hmm.
The person who has that attitude has an attitude that food's for eating and enjoying, you know, wine's for drinking, money is going to solve all my problems.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That seems to me that's one possibility.
There's a part of me that looks in that and just looks at it from a sarcastic kind of a view. That may be what he's saying. What else?
I think there's a point and counterpoint here. You can eat and drink and be merry, or you can be wise and make a good living.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe hard to do both.
Mm-hmm.
It's the contrast that he's pointing mm-hmm. out.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying that the money is the answer, that's for everything. He didn't say the love of the money.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's already had some things to say about money in two different ways. You know, that you can be rich as rich can be and be unhappy. You know, which sounds very different from what that's saying right there. On the other hand, he has said that when you work hard and you have accumulated some things in life, that you can find great joy and fulfillment in that. So what's the difference? I mean, how do you pull those thoughts and passages together? I mean, which is it? Is he saying two different things? What do you think he's saying?
Well, I'm wondering if he's not saying as viewed under the sun. As viewed from under the sun, people want to eat and be merry and drink, and money is the answer to everything. As viewed from under the sun.
Mm-hmm. Could be.
Yeah, with that in mind, people always want to be happy. That's the whole point of this world. Be happy.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be fine if you are happy. Well, the thing is, eating and drinking, in that especially drinking, it's only a momentary happiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, how long does that happiness last?
Not very long.
And for some, how long does money last? Not very long. You know, I mean, so there could be some points made with that as well. You know, Solomon has said some things. Think back to some other things that he has said, you know, regarding, you know, when you work hard, you can enjoy the things that you have. You can enjoy the things that you have to eat. But money is the answer for everything. That is not what he's been saying, you know, through the rest of the text. I you know, Perhaps it's the fool who lives for the moment, for the feast, for the wine, for the merriment that's found in life. I mean, it's only going to be for a period of time. I mean, what has he said in the past about it? I mean, you can eat everything you want today, but tomorrow you're hungry. You know, that's just a cycle that's going to just keep going around and around. Now, he has said some things about money. I mean, you can acquire, and if you're wise, money can last you longer. I don't know. I don't have the firmest answer on that. There's some very different ways that you can look at that. From a sarcastic view to some very practical views as well. Verse 20. Do not revile the king even in your thoughts, or curse the rich in your bedroom, because a bird of the air may carry your words, and a bird on the wing may report what you say. What's he talking about?
Well, in 2014, the bird would be called Twitter.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a valuable lesson for today that nothing is private.
Yeah.
You need to be very careful about your words and even about your thoughts, because those can transform into words.
Yeah.
Everybody seems to know everything.
Yeah, too much so.
Yes.
I mean, we've all heard someone in the past say, well, a little bird told me, you know, and they've got some little thing, you know, that they want to tell you about, you know, that they've kind of heard along the way. It's kind of like what Solomon's talking about here. But our opportunities of speaking when we shouldn't speak are just multiplied in so many ways today. I mean, more than once I've seen something on Facebook, even by a Christian, who has had to go back later and say, I'm sorry I said that. You know, I spoke out of line, or something like that. I mean, boy, I mean, we've always needed to be careful. But even more so now, because that little bird, you know, goes everywhere now. Right.
The emphasis is on getting caught by saying it, but the very first part of this verse says, even in your thought.
Yeah.
So don't even, it's almost like a amplified.
You know, if we can keep our thoughts where they need to be, keep our thoughts honest and pure, we don't have to worry so much about what comes out of our mouth. What does Jesus say about what comes out of our mouth? Defiles a man, and it's what comes from the heart. It's what comes from the heart that defiles a man, that comes out of his mouth. And so if we can keep our thoughts right and keep our thoughts pure, we sure will have a lot less problem with our thoughts.
All right.
Good. Good thoughts. Okay, so we kind of work our way here into to chapter 11. The story just kind of continues on here where Solomon is going, the advice that he's giving. And I've really just kind of looked at these last chapters in particular just as sage advice, you know, that he's giving. Here's what I've learned in life, so to speak. You know, and he's told us even about mistakes that has been made, you know, and it's like, don't do this. Don't make the same mistakes that I have. In chapter 11, there's a few things that as we go through here that, you know, have a... The bigger picture of it is, in my mind, get something out of life, really enjoy life, particularly the second half of this chapter. As compared to some of the earlier chapters where he was, as we said, it seemed to me, that's just so cynical and so pessimistic about so many issues about life, has kind of come to the point now of saying, you know, if you're careful about this and you look at life through the right kind of eyes and the right perspective, there's so much that you can enjoy in life, and you should enjoy in life. I mean, we should be able to enjoy life. God has made it in such a way that we can, and has given us so much in life that we can enjoy. There's still some warnings that he gives. Cast your bread upon the waters, for after many days you will find it again. Give portions to seven, yes to eight, for you do not know what disaster may come upon the land. Here's some advice he's given. What kind of advice would you call this? What's the idea here of what he's speaking about here? Cast your bread upon the waters? Well, that seems kind of useless. What's the point?
Two ways to look at it. One is, if you're a fisherman, you might be chumming the waters, getting the fish to come around.
Mm-hmm.
Another way to look at it is, if you're casting your life, your future upon the waters, that is, you become adventuresome and go out into different areas that may pay off for you.
Could. Think about this here. Cast your bread upon waters, for after many days you will find it again. How does that bread come back?
Soggy.
Yeah, soggy. Yeah, it comes back.
They usually get it.
Well, I think one of the practical applications of being kind to others and serving others is that one day you may need them.
Yeah.
And if you
and they may remember
cast
you.
Your kind acts to others and your service to others,
yeah,
then it comes back to you.
Mm-hmm.
When you need it, and others help you in a time of need.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right?
It says the opposite of greed.
Yeah.
This is an example of the opposite of a greedy mindset.
Giving portions away. To be liberal when it comes to charity. Be liberal when it comes to maybe those who are in need. I mean, what you give will come back, you know, is what he's saying here. I mean, give portions to seven, yes to eight, for you do not know what disaster may come upon the land. It's kind of in view here of what may come back to you.
I think there are times, and I know we've probably experienced them here, when you have an opportunity to help someone, there's some judgment involved in whether you help them or not. Because,
right,
you know, just not sure about the situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes we're just supposed to say, I would rather err on the side of being mistaken and giving somebody money who doesn't need it and not give someone money who does need it,
yeah,
or something to that.
Right. Well, I understand that. Difficult judgment.
I think along with the point Jeff made a minute ago, I think verses 1 through 6, this whole section here, 1 through 6, is basically talking about benevolence,
mm-hmm,
but expressing it in different ways.
Mm-hmm. I think so too. I think it's a benevolent type thing. It's a matter of giving and doing so liberally, and how even, you know, you never know when you may be the one that has to be the recipient, you know, one day. Jesus said some things that might be helpful for us to consider. In Luke chapter 6, verse 38. Luke chapter 6, verse 38. Jesus said, give, and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over will be put into your bosom. For with the same measure that you use, it will be measured back to you. I'm not sure what that meant. I kind of had to think about that for a while and read that over and over. You know, the idea here of, you know, give. Okay, I got that part. And it will be given to you. Well, I got that. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over will be put into your bosom. What's he talking about?
You ever buy a box of cereal at the grocery store and open it?
It's only half full.
Yeah.
You feel ripped off.
It's settled.
Yeah. Sold by weight, not by volume.
Yeah. Potato chips are the same way.
Isn't that something? Man, the bag feels so full when you pick that thing up. I think that's the idea really here. It's you know, when you're measuring something out, you know, shake that thing around, press it down, make sure if you're giving them a full vessel of something that it's really full is the idea. And it's like Jesus is saying, you know, by doing this, you know, make it even running over. It'll come back to you. It'll come back into your bosom. For with the same measure that you use, it'll be measured back to you. And so, if we are wanting, expecting others to be generous as they look our direction, we need to be that way to them first. You know, that was the idea of what Jesus was saying there.
I also think that if we are generous and fair, that perhaps God will be generous and fair
to us. Absolutely. You know, absolutely so. The 112th Psalm. The 112th Psalm, verse 5. Good will come to him who is generous and lends freely, who conducts his affairs with justice, Same idea, same thought really here. Being generous and being fair in your work and in your trading. Proverbs chapter 21. I've got several of these, just interesting little thoughts. Proverbs 21 and verse 13. Let's see here. If a man shuts his ears to the cry of the poor, he too will cry out and not be answered. That's interesting. I mean, there are always those that we can see and sometimes reach out to and help. And if we have the ability, we need to be doing that. We need to be thinking about that. And so, Solomon's thoughts, cast your bread upon the waters, and after many days you will find it again. Give portions to seven, yes to eight, for you do not know what disaster may come upon the land. Verse 3. If the clouds are full of water, they pour rain upon the earth. Whether a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where it falls, there it will lie. Whoever watches the wind will not plant. Whoever looks to the clouds will not reap. Well, a couple of different thoughts, really, to some of that. I mean, some of it is just things that we can't do anything about. You know, I mean, there's some things that we can't change. I mean, if the clouds are full of water, they pour rain upon the earth. I mean, sometimes we're really hoping and praying for rain. Sometimes we don't want rain, but the clouds are full. Guess what? It's going to rain. And we can't stop that. That's just kind of the way that is. You know, if a tree falls to the north or to the south or to the north, in the place where it falls, there it will lie. Sometimes you just can't control that. I mean, when you walk out into the woods and there's a tree that went down the night before in a storm, there it is. We can't change that. It's just the way it is. You know.
But if you're worried too much about where it's going to fall, you may never plant the tree to start with because it might fall.
Yeah, that's right. Whoever watches the wind will not plant. Whoever looks at the clouds will not reap. You know, one of the greatest difficulties in the spring for a farmer is trying to time the right time to plant or to fertilize. You know, you want to try to hit that right. But, you know, it's kind of like, was it Farmer Brown and Farmer Smith? You know? I mean, you can look at some things in such a way where you don't do anything. And farming can very much be like that. Well, I don't want to plant today because it's not going to rain for a week. And then all of a sudden, you know, a few days later, rain comes. I can't plant now. It's too muddy. You know, or you're trying to go out and cast some fertilizer, you know, but you're afraid it's too windy. Well, sometimes indeed it's too windy. But if you don't watch out, pretty soon the time for fertilizer is already passed. It's already gone because you've put it off and put it off. You know, sometimes you have to stop talking and just do it. You know, get something done. Thoughts?
My dad used to have a saying. It was four boys in the family, and it was always some kind of project going on around the house, fixing something, repairing something. And sometimes he'd stand around studying on how he was going to do it. Finally, he'd say, "Well, boys, we're
going
to have to do something, even if it's wrong."
You only stand for so
time
long.
Thinking about it, so we got to keep busy.
Yeah, that's right. Other thoughts? All right, I think we're going to stop right there tonight. Our time is going. We don't have time to get into the next point, but Lord willing, we're going to take up here, you know, at verse 6, and work our way through chapter 11. This latter part of chapter 11, I really, really like. So many good points that can be made. Remember your Creator while young. Just some really vital stuff, even if we're not so young, to keep in mind. Appreciate your good comments tonight.